Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
He's not one of us.
He's a half-breed. A mongrel.
He needs to learn his place.
His place?
Have you forgotten yours?
The humans of Earth were slaves to their petty differences. The imaginary lines drawn on maps by their ancestors. We are superior to them, not just because of the genetic modifications they made to us, but because we are not subject to the instincts that divided them from one another. That drove them to fight endless wars. We will not repeat their mistakes. On this world, all who follow me are the same. We live and die together, with and for one another. There is no other way.
Yes, my lord.
Yes, Connor.
Yes, my lord.
Family, it's the most important thing. No, it's the timer.
The timer, exactly.
The timer. Click.
Yeah.
All right. There, eight. You know what that means, Jesse?
That means we're recording.
It means we're recording.
Officially.
Wait, are we recording?
We're recording. Officially.
Look at that.
It's on. It's rolling.
The time is going
on. Rolling, rolling.
Wait, when did, wait, did we start?
We
Where
started.
Was I? How did
rolling.
I? Why
you were just there. You were right here. You've been here the whole
why
time.
Didn't you guys tell me? I missed it.
No, we just did.
I
we
missed
just figured,
out.
We figured you,
know
you were ready to go.
You know I hate missing out on things.
So
you guys are always ditching me. Why are you always ditching me?
Well,
I thought you were my friends. I guess I was wrong.
Ditching, that's not ditching you. That's ditching. Ditching is like if we walk down the street and then like we say, hey, look over there. And then we like run back to
that's
the
essentially
house.
What you did in podcast form. So like all this time, I thought you were my friends. And like I'm still trying to convince myself that you're my friends. But at some point, I have to realize that if you keep ditching me, it means you're not my friend.
There's a few other perspectives.
No,
I'll present two alternatives to you. One alternative is that you were distracted and not paying attention.
Hmm.
But I'm not so cruel as to suggest that.
I don't buy it.
So blame the victim. Blame the victim.
I am. You're declaring yourself the victim.
Who's
I think
the victim?
Jesse and I may be victims here, but I don't think so.
I think
are you accusing me of victimizing myself?
No, I think...
You're just trying to victimize me.
I think, like all the best Studio Ghibli films...
Okay. Ghibli, Ghibli, Ghibli.
We are like Studio Ghibli.
This is just a circumstantial thing. It's a communications thing. I think what happened was... you were so intently reviewing your notes because you want to do a good job for the audience. And you were so enraptured. Well, that maybe that's not the kind way to put it. You were trying to make sure you had all your thoughts in order. And so you're looking so intently at your little laptop screen there. I don't know why I said little. I do not know why I'm...
See,
I'm,
look what he did.
I'm subtly now inserting
he's,
these pejoratives.
He's condescending.
No, I'm trying to not be condescending. I'm trying to call out...
Cute little laptop. We'll go
yeah,
there.
Call out my own mistakes. And
little sound
on your little laptop with your little bitty sound.
Little bits.
It's so cute that you think that that's useful.
What's happening, Dan, is in trying to defend myself, I think you've convinced me. I think I've convinced me over to your position.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. See?
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
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 Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
There is no beginning. There is no end. There is only the eternal.
I thought you might edit in, there is only Zool.
That would be clever.
That's a Ghostbusters reference.
That is a Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters, great movie.
Yes!
It's comedy and horror. Horror.
Right.
Rural juror.
Rural juror.
Horror.
Horror.
Yeah, hello everyone.
Hi.
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh shit.
I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
That one was a long one.
All right. Yeah. Normally when I say welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast, Dan is compelled to play the first clip that he has queued up.
But this is
because it's associated with that.
But this is 8.44 seconds. It's a little too long to be funny.
bit on the long side.
Bit on the long yeah. side.
But we are the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Yeah, we are.
Always.
I'm Patrick.
And forever.
Dan is over there and Jesse's over there
yes.
too.
Do not lie to me.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun one. So this is episode 314 of that podcast that
Damn,
I mentioned.
Damn, dude.
Earlier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it a while.
We've been doing it.
We have.
Doing it well.
And
how dare you suggest such a thing?
And I'm very excited to say that we're doing something a little bit different this yeah. week. This week, not only this week, we've decided after doing this, we mm-hmm. Last week on the fly, last week we discussed Space Seed. And we thought, hey, everyone's digging this con podcast. We hadn't heard it yet.
Yeah.
We said, why don't we cover the first episode?
Unless you wish.
And as it happens, you know, Dan, Jesse, and I banged our heads together.
Bang, bang, bang.
We did some co-noodling.
It sounded like this.
Because of all the metal in our heads.
There was only two bells. I think in Space Seed they did three bells.
They did more bells, but it was a little confusing talk going along with it. Yeah. It was not as isolated as I wanted it
Good
to
point.
Be.
Good point. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
Oh, fun fact.
Okay.
I
didn't even, by the way, I was in the middle of revealing something.
What's sorry, so
fun fault,
about
my fault, my fault. That's my fault.
But I don't know. That fun fact sounds pretty good. How about this? Let me just reveal just okay. to get it out of the way.
Yeah.
We decided, we co-noodled.
Co-noodled.
And decided we're going to go ahead and cover each of these episodes mm-hmm. over each. The next few weeks. Yep. Many weeks, I suppose. I think there are nine episodes
nine
total.
With pleasure.
Is this too loud? Is this too loud?
I don't know. You can maybe turn it down.
Might have been. I don't have one of those meters in front of me.
I'll try a little peaky softer.
Meters.
We're excited about this because, yeah, this is a podcast on podcast situation.
Yeah, this
right?
is crazy. This is like Inception.
Yeah.
That is one of those. Yeah, man. I was thinking about that like a few days ago. I was like, we're going to do a podcast about a podcast.
Yeah,
no,
gods.
No way.
Jesse's mind was fucking blown.
It went inside out for a minute.
That's madness.
Woke up. I didn't know what happened.
The format is interesting. The story is interesting. And it's kind of fun doing this whole sticking with the extending, you know, filling in that space between Space Seed and Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Most intriguing.
Yeah, most intriguing indeed. So, okay, that was the announcement there. So get settled in. We're going to cover this podcast over the next little bit here.
We're going to try.
Now, Dan.
Well, we never announced what episode we're doing.
Oh, shit. Well, yeah. I said we were doing the first episode, but I did not say the title. You're yeah. right. Now, do you want to do the fun fact before the title episode?
Okay, sure.
I just want to keep it clear sure. to the audience out there, because you talked about a fun fact, and then that interrupted my thing, and then
fun
I did my
fact.
It better be fun, dude.
Let's do the fun fact, and then the title of the episode.
Okay. The fun fact is that these sounds, because it is from a podcast source, mm-hmm. these are all in stereo.
Oh.
Normally I do mono because yeah. I grab the sounds and I grab the center channel yeah. from the surround mm-hmm. setup because that's the most dialogue heavy
screens.
That's the most dialogue heavy channel. It's the
why did Jesse just say screens?
I don't know. Jesse says
because you're watching it on a screen.
But like, but why? But okay. But
this is an audio situation.
Yeah, I think people. I think that's implied.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail things, but it so confused me that he just stated the word screens. I think we kind of understand. Where you're coming
I
from
think
that,
that's my role in the podcast.
Right. To be chaos, the yeah. agent of chaos.
I think that's been established.
So normally I grab just the center channel, so it's mono, but since this is a podcast, it was already in stereo. And instead of mixing it down to mono, I was just like, well, there's no reason not to just leave yeah. it as it is, you know.
So. I'm digging that.
Yeah.
I'm
so just so you're aware, I think that's kind of fun.
It is a fun.
It's
fact.
Mildly fun fact.
Yeah. Is that the, these are I had normally, the most fun with
normally
it.
These are center channel mono. This is now a stereo podcast radio form. Good. Okay.
Well, we're going to learn more about Dan's process in a little bit. But first, we do need to tell you what the title of the episode is. Now, you as an audience member, you're not dumb. You already know this, right?
What if there's someone out there that doesn't know? They're like, oh.
They were just clicking randomly and blindly.
Apologies, my lord.
First of all, there's some of that, and we're going to account for that. There are also people who just, you know, they would pop up in the playlist. And auto downloads, auto playlists. You know, right there, Jesse. It could come about that somebody's listening to this episode without having being cognizant about which episode that we're talking about.
Yeah,
so
that's ridiculous.
So for those people,
We'll get in some kind of It's Got Star Trek trance.
Sure.
Just keep listening.
And maybe, or maybe they're in somebody else is playing the podcast and they're in the same room and they don't have access to the playlist. But for those people, just to let you know, the name of the first episode of season one of Star Trek Con is Paradise.
From this quintessence of dust, we will rise.
Yes.
Episode one, Paradise.
Paradise. I was hoping you were going to
play that. And they did that.
The Paradise.
Paradise.
And you notice they do the yodeling thing where there's someone in a background going, ah! Yeah. Like, I'm not going to go that high. They're like, ah!
That's sort of like a mix between a yodel and a ululation.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah. And one it's like, and they do it in a lot of like Hollywood movies and stuff like that.
Where
to let you know that it's some kind of like
epic
sort of like, yeah, epic.
Star
basically,
Trek.
It's epic.
And Star Trek, yeah.
You're epic in the middle of some like, you know, cross border war or something like
Paradise.
That.
Paradise.
You know, the part
that was a little goofy.
The part here.
Episode one, Paradise.
Yeah. Paradise.
Paradise.
Is that a real voice or do you think it's a
Star Trek Con?
I think that's a real voice.
Yeah, like
I would presume.
I would think so.
I hope you're right, Khan.
Because only a real person could do that.
Yeah.
We are humanity perfected in strength, in intellect, in vision.
Is that referring to us, Dan?
Yep.
We three.
Three of us.
We three podcast
hosts.
Me
too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so Paradise, the first episode of this 9-part series. So before we get into the story.
Do we have any front stuff to do?
No, the only front stuff we had to do is I did want to, in a moment, I wanted to ask Dan about his process. And then for the audio clips, he gave us a little insight into that already. So maybe there's not much additional to report. But the other thing I did want to ask about is just generally speaking, what are your fellows' experiences / opinions of audio dramas?
Okay, first of all,
going back to like there's the radio dramas, there's other podcast audio dramas, scripted dramas, I should say.
First I want to establish that all three of us, we've only seen heard the first episode. We haven't heard
right
the
now
whole thing,
for this so, yeah. for this week we've only each heard the first episode. Right.
There are no tricks.
I like audio dramas are awesome.
Yes.
You know, they're cool. I mean, it's like a book on tape, except it's geared more. It's not a book. It's a play.
But did you ever go out of your way to listen to them or something? Like, so to give you an example, you know, when we grew up in the 1980s and stuff, this was not like a common thing. What we had a lot of access to, there were comedy albums, right?
you know,
there was like Adam Sandler's comedy CD with the Nighttime is the Right Time, you know, that sort of thing. there was a lot of that.
I don't remember
Jerky
that.
Boy.
The Jerky Boys was another thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing.
I just don't remember a lot of access to that sort of thing. Later, I would hear audio dramas on NPR. I think I don't know if they still do, but on Sundays.
On WAMU? Is it WAMU?
That's the NPR, National Public Radio Station for Washington, D.C.
Yeah, right. And it's called like The Big Show.
They do like sort of vintage.
Yeah, from like the 50s or something.
Or even earlier, I think.
Yeah, that was.
It's like when everyone talked in that certain kind of way.
Yeah.
But I have listened to a few of those or stumbled on those while driving or something and been completely enraptured. And I've heard Jimmy Stewart, Betty White, you know, all these people later became very famous actors. Mm-hmm. A lot of them got their start doing these radio dramas. And I'm always so impressed with the Foley. You know, the Foley is what makes it, you know, all like the little clips and claps and dudes and doobles and
squeaks.
Dabbles.
Squeaks and squawks.
But there is also
might make a historian of you yet, Ensign.
There's a style. I think there's a style to the vocalizing, to the voiceover work that's different than in other forms. But that's why I was curious if you guys ever kind of sought out these things.
I never specifically sought them out. It sounded like I said sodomize.
Not until you said it.
No, Dan, it did not. Sound like that.
Well, at least I didn't say. There are some few other words I'm trying to avoid saying.
But it's okay to say that because there's nothing wrong.
Use a lot of potty talk, and I'm trying to use less potty talk.
Dan, before the podcast started, Dan, sort of apropos of nothing, this is not something that Jesse and I brought up, but Dan said he was going to try to avoid mentioning, what was it, pee or poo?
You're not going to trick me.
I'm not tricking you.
You're not going to trick me.
He said that, but.
You guys can say it all you want. I'm just saying I'm going to try to do less. But then I said sodomize instead.
So. No, you said you thought you said something that sounded like you said sodomize.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But I guess I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were in the middle of a point.
Oh, yeah, it was just I haven't really sought them out. I did listen to the big
big
broadcast every once in a while, but no, it's not something that I'm
Didn't that guy die?
Overly familiar with.
Probably. People are dying all the time.
By the way, before I forget, sorry, this is kind of a side quest. Okay. Maybe totally not even part of the same mission at all. I was thinking that we could have a new segment called Jesse Revisited. Because I was listening to part of the last week's podcast, and at some point we were doing like the I'm Dan, I'm Jesse kind of thing, or something like that. Yeah. And then
also known as Patrick's favorite bit.
Yeah, right. And Jesse said something to the effect of like, I'm Dan, I'm gonna try to tell you how to park.
No, that was because was that last week? Yeah. Or
Well, it happened.
Or the week before.
It happened twice. It happened twice, actually. Once you came to my house for some reason, and like the way you parked, I was like, you know, you can move your car back a little bit that way. That way you can fit another car in over there. And you just looked at me and you're like, all you said is like, you want me to move my car? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's not a big deal.
And you're like, okay. Which house was that?
I like your impersonation of your own voice.
Was that at your current house?
Yeah. It was very recent. It was in the last couple months.
Must have been like really grumpy or something.
I think you might have even been helping me with something, which is even worse. Like you were helping me with something. I was like, you know, Jesse, if you move the car.
Oh, right. Because other people were going to come over too, right?
Well, I don't even know.
To help you with your TV whatever.
It's just like in front, like when people park in the middle, that means only one car can fit. But if you can finagle it so two cars can fit.
Yeah, I'm a selfish parker.
No. I mean, it was like you were doing me a favor and I was like, you know, you can. Anyway, but then recently, like when we parked to do the podcast, like you didn't move up as far as I wanted you to, so I could fit behind. And then I mentioned it inside.
Well, you all stuck your head out of the car. You were like, really? And I was like, what?
Okay, so yeah, so that's Jesse Revisited right there. The little things that Jesse says that I don't catch at the time.
I like that. I like that segment idea because it is true. I'm often delighted while editing the podcast and listening back and hearing Jesse make some clever little statement that Dan and I didn't hear because Dan and I were talking about some other totally less interesting nonsense.
When I caught that, it hit me hard. I was like, yeah, I guess I do. I do that. I almost said I do that.
I do.
But then I would have broken my rule.
Broken your rule.
By pointing it out, have I broken my rule?
No.
Okay.
It's still safe.
By the way, okay, by the by, are there any duties or no duties?
There is one.
Okay, so we'll save that for later.
I almost missed it too.
Oh, really?
Wow. It was on a re-listen after I'd already done my notes. I was like, oh shit, I don't know how I missed that. It's different trying to like absorb this situation with audio.
It's
only
a different thing.
Well, let's get right into it then, because I was really curious listening to this, thinking in my head, I was like, okay, this is really fascinating. I'm really enjoying this. I wonder if Dan's sound clip collection process will be different. And I imagine it has to be in some way.
I didn't get to say my part about radio drama.
Okay, you're right. Keeping us on track, Jesse. Your part about radio drama.
Good sticking up for yourself, Jesse.
That's a preview. The preview to talk about Dan's process.
From a very early age, the truth. I listened to the NPR like Star Wars radio show.
You have a poster of that.
Because I have a couple of posters of that. And those are my dad worked for NPR.
Yeah, those are some awesome old school looking Star Wars.
Yeah, they're like really cool.
Artwork, that old art Star Wars art that looks awesome.
It's like C-3PO and he's got like headphones on and there's like some space shit in the background.
Does he have headphones on because it's a radio show?
Yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
NPR.
Well, that was a good anecdote.
Yeah. And at least for like there was a Star Wars and an Empire Strikes Back. And I don't remember what happened to the Return of the Jedi one, but
that'd be fucked up if they just didn't bother with it.
But like, I listened to that, like they would broadcast it on the radio and I had it on tapes on like a whole bunch of cassette tapes. And I would listen to that jinx. And later on I discovered there was, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah. That was a radio show.
Yeah,
I think it
originated as a radio
cool to
show.
Listen to. Yeah, and it was totally the same. Had the same kind of vibe. Like,
yeah, Hitchhiker's Guide is interesting because if I recall correctly, I think it might have started as a radio show, then was a novel, then was TV show, and then, you know, movie much later.
Does Greaseman count as radio plays?
No, the Greaseman. The Greaseman. Anybody
that's
out there?
That's going to get edited out.
No. Most of our audience will not know who the Greaseman is, but you should look up the Greaseman.
Yeah, dude.
It's
what's his name? Greasinelli or something?
Yeah, no, it wasn't Greasinelli.
Mike Sharp?
No.
Doug Tracht.
Oh, my God. The '80s and '90s was an interesting time for radio. Yeah. Well, yeah, because
he needs to learn his place.
Well, part of the reason why I bring up the whole history of audio drama stuff is, again, we were raised on a lot of audio entertainment, but it was drive time DJs, kind of wacky, goofy DJs, yeah, like Don and Mike.
Lots of morning stuff.
Ron and Fez, Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. And then they also, you had the conservative talk radio where a lot of
that
people
listened
to it for fun, just because it was funny to listen to them, like G. Gordon Liddy.
He's a funny dude.
Yeah, he's kind of a comical person. But these were live, goofy radio sort of variety show type things. And then, of course, later you have podcasts and you have a lot of comedy podcasts or comedy improv and stuff. But it's a different flavor than the scripted audio dramas.
Mm-hmm. I still have one of my songs on like YouTube somewhere under the Ron and Fez channel.
Oh, should we link it?
If you want.
Do you have the link to it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what
you
off
made
the top
several,
of my head.
But, several nice tunes.
But like,
for that,
you don't know, it's like http://.
It's funny that you do that first. You
www.youtube.com.
Why do you bother to mention anything before the www?
Well, I just want people to know that we're talking about secure.
That's a good point.
Secure connections.
Secure
here.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a few songs for that show. I did several songs. Oh. Jesse mentioned one last week, Muffin Mouth.
They were all really great.
The first name
it was
bases.
For like it was for like games that they would do. Yeah, first name bases.
Yeah, they would do these little game shows like for whatever kind of product they were supposed to give away or something.
Muffin Mouth was like it was like you had a muffin in your mouth.
Yeah,
and you were supposed to guess what you were saying or something.
Well,
figure it out.
Yeah, yeah,
Muffin Mouth.
And
Muffin Man.
Well, the song, I remember when I recorded the song, I sang it with a mouthful of muffin.
Exactly. Yeah, you sang it and then you had a muffin in your mouth. That was the best part.
Yeah. It's these little game shows. I came up with tunes for them that they had. And then there's like one song in particular that they have. Yeah, I somewhere I have it.
Well, audience, check out the show notes. If we remember, we will put the link to that song and any other of
first name basis.
If we find any of those.
They're originally from WNEW in New York. Oh. They once were once referred to as WJFK days as their Pinkerton, which Pinkerton is a Weezer album.
Yeah.
And it's the Weezer album that like is the weird one.
Well, yeah, because people thought it was weird.
Weird. And I think Rivers Cuomo might not have even liked it that much. But like some people think Pinkerton is like their best album.
It is
their best album.
Jesse apparently is one of those people.
Yeah, so WJFK is when I was on the show. And like, so he referred to it as that, meaning kind of like WJFK was like their weird time that like some people really like and other people are like, this is a weird time.
Anyway. I put Mark Me Down as liking that period of Ron and Fez.
Yeah, I did
but,
too.
But again, the point being that we didn't have a lot of the audio drama stuff, but there was a lot of audio entertainment. And I'm really curious, I'm happy to see that this podcast, the Star Trek Con podcast, seems to have been successful. I don't know what the numbers are, but the people on Blue Sky, et cetera, seem to really enjoy it for the most part.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really great opportunity for a new format to tell these kinds of stories, these Star Trek stories, that kind of like how the animated series, and I mean that with an apostrophe, because you have the TAS and Lower Decks and Prodigy and some other stuff. The animated series let them do some more alien stuff, bigger stories, because it's animated. You don't have to build the sets. The audio thing is takes that a step further, right? Because you don't even have to fucking animate that
shit. You can have Tuvok play himself as an insect.
I think that we live in a cynical world, and I know the time we grew up was in some ways fairly cynical. And I could imagine it can be difficult to enjoy an audio drama if you have a certain mindset where you're like, I'm not willing to sit there and listen to things in headphones and suspend my disbelief. I either want to read it in a book and fully imagine it, or I want to see it on screen and have it all done for me. And the audio drama is this like in between. Cause I love reading. I love watching visual art, but this is a really interesting third other kind of art form that's really enjoyable.
So it's interesting taking notes was a different experience altogether because there's nothing to look at.
I was like, what am I looking at? I was having that problem. I was like, I don't know. Should I look at that wall over there?
And there's,
that's my house.
And why is the wall melting?
And then there's there's sort of like I don't know if you want to call it a concession for audio or whatever you want to call it, but there's definitely tactics they have to use. Like, for example, some guy at one point was like, I was moving your lady's belongings to your tent as you directed. And then MacGyver goes, I'm not his lady or yous. I am not your lady.
I could never be your woman.
I'm not his lady or your... Wow, I have a hard time. The two Utes. Okay,
we're gonna get through this together, Dan.
Together, thank you.
We're all here.
We're gonna do this together. Uh-huh. There's a
sound clip that's
together. You will find a way.
Ah, there we go. Perfect.
So this guy, a guy says, "I was moving your lady's belongings to your tent as you directed," and then Marla MacGyver's goes, "I'm not his lady
Marla MacGyver's."
In the middle of a quote. Middle quote. Thank you. The guy says, I was moving your lady's belongings to your tent as you directed. Then Marla MacGyver goes, I'm not his lady or yours. I am Lieutenant Marla MacGyver. Mm-hmm. And my belongings were perfectly fine in the cargo pod. Okay. Amidst all that muck of what I just spat out right now, what I was trying to get at, which would have been much better. The point would have been made better had I gotten it right the first time. But the point being is, like, she very obviously announces, she's like, I'm not this. I'm Marla MacGyver's, you know?
Yeah.
And then there was another one that happened with Mado. With Mado.
Yeah.
Where Mado.
Vamp and Dan, you call him Vamp and Dan. Okay. He's not vamping. Okay. He just stopped vamping, so Patrick had to start vamping. Vamping Pat.
Ivan goes, care to give me a hand, Ursula? And then Ursula goes...
No, Ivan goes, care to give me a hand. Sorry.
It's okay.
With pleasure.
What is he saying here?
Now, you know I can refuse you nothing, my self-talk.
You know what? Let's play it again.
Now, you know I can refuse you nothing, my self-talk.
My self-talk?
You know I can refuse nothing, but I don't know the... That's what I sort of hear, and then I don't get the rest.
Yeah, my something or other.
Sounds shady.
We'll play that over.
He was not the only one you needed to convince.
That was a good ending.
Yeah. But he goes, care to give me a hand, Ursula? And then Ursula goes, these hands were made for more skilled labor. And then he goes, not according to your woman. And that's how they very obviously introduce Mado. Now, it made me wonder, though, like, that line doesn't really make any sense.
No.
These hands were made for more skilled labor, meaning, like, she does fancy things and not lift stuff. And then he goes, not according to your woman.
So you're saying your partner thinks that you should do
heavy fumbly fingers?
You're right. You know, I didn't even catch that at the time. It's a little bit of an awkward.
Yeah, it doesn't really, like, what does, like, what is, according to Mado, what does she do?
It sounds like she should have kicked him in the balls.
Yeah.
Or it goes following the overall point you're making here, Dan, that they do have to convey information in a different way in the audio format that sometimes can be a little bit cumbersome.
Yeah, because it's just like, I'm here now, look at me, you know, as opposed to just showing him on the screen.
It's a different, it's exposition, but it's kind of different than the TV exposition where you don't have enough time to explain relationships, so you're all like, hey there, bro, you're my brother, we grew up in the same house together.
Yeah, right.
We have the same parents because you're my brother.
Right.
And so now the following things will make more sense.
Yeah.
They wouldn't make sense if I didn't explain that you were my bro, but my actual bro, not my bro.
Yeah.
Bro. And it's something that, you know, would have made sense to people that are, you know, are used to listening to radio dramas. Yeah. But those people,
these hands were made for more skilled labor.
Those people are all dead. So.
Oh, man.
It will be when I have some power.
Power?
When you have power.
I'm sorry. I have to. Hoverboards don't work on water.
Because why?
Unless you have power.
Okay.
Power.
Right. Power.
Kill Captain Kirk.
What kind of power?
I don't know. Is this a setup for a joke?
No, it's not. It's that's the
Right. Yeah, what kind of power was that?
I was adding the unnecessary part. Plutonium. You already made the joke, and I wanted to be a part of it. So, like, I tacked on my bit.
It's fucked up that 2015 was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
watching Back to the Future.
It's not cool.
Yeah, well, there's no like cool like grape dispenser.
And I remember in 2015 when everyone was like, "It's the future, Back to the Future, future."
There's no hover cars.
There's no hover cars, and that was 10 years ago.
Although the Cubs did win the World Series the following year.
Who gives a fuck?
You are displeased.
Was there any additional point to your point, Dan? Just because we're nearing up on a break.
Oh,
here.
Shit. No, no, no. My point was just like, it's interesting. We were talking about audio dramas and what about them. I really did enjoy this episode a lot, though.
Totally. You
know? By the third listen, I was kind of like, okay, ready to move on to the next episode. Well, but sure. But the first one, I was like,
three times.
Yeah, I listened twice for once.
Why did you listen for once?
Once for once.
Okay.
The second time was for notes, and then the third time just to sort of pound it in.
Just pound it. Pound it in, baby. Pound it.
It is my intention to find the truth.
Yeah. Okay, so that's actually a good segue. We do need to take a break, but when we get back, we'll start with talking about this framing device for this story that presumably will continue to be the framing device throughout the rest of the total 9-episode run.
It better be.
So we'll take a break, and we will be right back.
Is that what the young people call it these days?
Whoops. That wasn't even the right sound.
Well, play the right sound.
It's an omen, my friends. A sign of our glory to come.
That was the right sound.
Good on you, Dan.
Thanks. Shit.
And we're back.
Good afternoon, Mala.
Why did you come here?
Look around, both of you. The time has come to forge our path.
This hearing of the Starfleet Civilian Resource Allocation Committee is now in session.
That was my favorite.
That was... So here's the thing.
That's radio, baby.
I think this is a very well written, very well produced, very well performed show.
Yeah.
All of the performers are great. However,
really great.
Some of them are a little bit funny.
Yeah,
we already alluded to the fella playing Ivan, who, again, I think partly because it's an audio drama, he's all like, extra large.
Yeah,
right. I'm extra large.
By the way, my name is Ivan.
I'm sorry, may I kill him now, my lord?
Yeah. I'm 1990s Russian augment.
None of these croakers can match our strength.
The 90s.
But that...
with pleasure.
That one dude's listening to like some kind of 90s music.
Ivan was listening to a song.
You found that boombox.
Ivan was listening to a song. It's called Building Walls by Honeycutts. That's the name of the band, Honeycutts.
I never heard of them either. I'm from the 90s.
But he was listening. Ivan was listening to some punk rock, but Fancy Hugo wanted some Bach.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Fucking Hugo.
Hugo.
By the way, we should note that this was written by Kirsten.
The slimy tentacle things went half bad.
This was written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack. Both are prominent Star Trek authors. They've written a number of novels and things like that. The story originally by Nicholas Meyer. And this is something Nicholas Meyer has been pushing this Star Trek con thing for a number of years now. And I think originally he was aiming to get a TV show made. I think he wanted a short form TV
show. I would
watch
this TV show.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the story idea...
it could be animated.
There's even after just one episode, it's clear that there's enough meat thematically and plot wise for filling that 10-year span between Star Trek Space Seed and Star Trek Wrath of Khan.
The nice thing about these audio plays is that because there's no visuals, they have to rely on good writing or like at least entertaining, like something that's going to draw you
and
in.
And good, reading of the lines.
In terms of story. So like that's kind of like nice going into it, being like, okay, well, if it's getting good reviews and if they put all this effort into, I mean, they got some famous people. I didn't realize Naveen Andrews, who plays, who was in Lost.
He was in Lost.
He played
Saeed.
Saeed. And
it was one of the best parts of that television program.
Yeah, it was. Well, it's funny because he's Australian and he sounds totally different in real life when he talks than what he does in, because the accent he puts on as Khan is kind of similar in
to
a way.
Side, yeah.
Not the same, but
I'm sure it doesn't aggravate this Australian native that he's got, that everyone wants him to play scary, unusual ethnic people.
Yeah, he plays this sort of like soft spoken but badass person.
Yes. He does do it very well. So I'm joking, but he does do an excellent job here. And by the way, we should have said it outright. I mean, you can't do this podcast, you can't do this story without somebody filling those shoes of Ricardo Montalban well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And thus far, I'm totally buying into Naveen.
Yeah.
I was immediately engrossed in this story, particularly when he came on the scene. Because again, you can tell. It starts with this framing device that introduces a couple of other favorite old characters.
Hell yeah.
In Hikaru Sulu, Captain Sulu, who references Captain Kirk dying.
Just recently.
So this took place 3 months after after
Captain Kirk.
The events of Star Trek Generations, when Captain Kirk saves the Enterprise B, but in the process is believed to be killed. But in fact, spoiler alert, he went into the Nexus.
Is it your intention to tarnish the legacy of one of Starfleet's most decorated officers?
But didn't they have his body somewhere?
Well, that was later.
I want to.
That was in Star Trek.
Quickly retract something I said earlier. I said he plays soft-spoken characters. Khan is definitely not soft-spoken, what I kind of meant is sort of like a soothing, you know, kind of
well-spoken.
I think I got what you mean because the thing about Khan, and Ricardo Montalban played him this way as well. It's not that he wouldn't yell or become dramatic, but it wasn't a screechy. It wasn't his power is not. It's not him being frustrated. He's being performative usually when he's yelling. Mm-hmm. Even if he's actually angry, it's not the anger
it's
propelling
operatic.
It. Yes, and we saw that last week in when we discussed Space Seed. The whole interaction between Khan and Marla MacGyver's, where he's like, stay or go or do whatever, you know, it was very, it was like a dance and they both knew it. And I think there's a lot of that's been continued here because Kirsten Beyer, David Mack, Nicholas Meyer, they know what the fuck they're doing. And to stress the Nicholas Meyer part here, he of course, I'm sure most people listening know, but in case you didn't, Nicholas Meyer was the director of Star Trek II, heavily involved in that production, as well as Star Trek VI. And he has a certain sensibility that connected with a number of people. And he's been given an opportunity here to continue that tale that he started in Star Trek II.
I understand how important this is to both of you.
I thought that might...
It kind of sounded like it was going to keep going. Yeah.
It's like, what's next?
Yeah. There was this story. I noted that this story comes in basically 13 different basic parts.
Is this a list?
Okay.
Sounds like a list, baby.
It's kind of a list, but there's no other way to describe, like... If you're going to say, there are five different parts to this thing.
Points?
Yeah, a series of, well, when you say, like, there's five parts to this thing, that's by definition going to be a list.
Sure.
So this is not a drawn-out list. It's just, I was just going to say the different parts of the story.
Oh,
well,
really?
That's okay. Drawn-out is subjective. Why don't you let Jesse, the audience, and I...
Okay.
Determine whether or not this list is drawn out. But I
Jesse,
do want,
the audience, and
I... do want to hear this list. So I'm going to get comfy here in my chair. My little
Unless you wish.
My little captain's chair, and I get ready for one of Dan's classic lists.
All right.
Fine.
So number one, the first part is the hearing.
You said number one.
I did.
Sorry.
I did.
It's the name of Picard's dog.
Number one.
His dog?
Yeah, and Picard.
Oh, was it? Oh, I forgot.
Very briefly, he has a pit bull named Number One.
Right. Something happens to him. We don't really know what happens.
I don't know.
You see him a couple times later. Yeah. Anyway.
So yeah, the first part was the hearing, but with or I don't know if it was the hearing or what, committee hearing or whatever. With,
it sounded like they got the bells, right?
Yeah,
so
they got
it's
the
hearing, and it had the bland voice lady because that's what I was trying to get at later or earlier. That play that clip of the judge or magistrate or whatever.
Okay. There's
her.
This hearing of the Starfleet Civilian Resource Allocation Committee is now in session. You may.
It's so funny because you just start playing and just starts fucking cracking up. And I get it too, because the performance, I mean, it's not a bad performance. It's just kind of funny because on the one hand, it's exactly what you'd expect a kind of a workaday hearing person to sound like, because they're just sort of like blasé about their job. On the other hand, I don't know. It's just kind of funny because they're talking about this, like going back to SETI Alpha 5.
Isn't that like the first thing you hear on the podcast?
Is the first thing
after,
you no, no,
after like commercials? And
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
after, yeah. After the commercials. We'll talk about the commercials later.
But that's what you hear, and like it all comes through, and you're like, oh, whoa, what am I listening
SETI
to?
SETI Alpha 5.
Lieutenant Marla MacGyver's.
Khan Noonien Singh.
Sounds stroganoff my ass.
They didn't have the sea bass yet.
My ass. Beef stroganoff my ass.
It was pre-sea bass.
That was another line that was kind of, I don't know, it was a little...
performative.
Yeah, something about it.
I like when the magistrate lady, not that this matters to anybody, but the magistrate lady sounded very similar to my grandmother. I think that was the other thing. Just, I don't know.
Holograms?
So there was that hearing part. And then part two is they go down, and she go down, and we get a little bit of Tuvok. They go down to actually find the logs. So there's Tuvok.
I am a Starfleet officer, a deeply disturbed and incredibly violent individual. I am not a historian.
I was Tuvok.
Tuvok. Tim Russ does a great job settling back into that character role.
And one thing I want to note is when Tuvok says,
I am not a historian.
And he's like,
I am a Starfleet officer.
remember, I don't know if you guys remember, but back in space, I think it was Arena. It was an Arena. Because he says, I'm not a historian, I'm a Starfleet officer whose current captain was among those Khan assaulted. Back in the episode Arena, I was saying that Spock goes, they're asking, like, what have you heard about this sector? And Spock's like, nothing specific, Captain. Unscientific rumors only. More like space legends. And then another part in that episode, McCoy's like, can that be true? Was Cestus III an intrusion on their space? Spock says it may well be possible. We know very little about that section of the galaxy. McCoy goes, then we could be in the wrong. Spock says, perhaps that is something best decided by the diplomats. And I was making a point back then that Spock's job is not to interpret unscientific rumors and diplomatic agreements. Just like it's not Tuvok's job to analyze his history, because he's not a historian. Spock is not a diplomat. Spock is a Starfleet officer.
Right.
Tuvok is not a historian. He's a Starfleet officer. These are Vulcans being very specific about their roles. They're like, I'm going to go within my lane only on this one.
Right,
so, and then so I just think this kind of supported that.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they intended it to or not. This sort of Vulcan attitude of their...
They're by the book. Yeah,
how they treat their roles. Whereas
they're union men.
Whereas like a freewheeling human might... be more like, well, I'm going to take my hand at bocce ball, even though I never played it before.
Right.
Vulcan's like, I'm not a bocce ball player.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Dan,
never played that before.
I got to say, I like your kind of freewheeling human.
Yeah, right.
Experimenting with bocce ball.
Beef stroganoff my ass.
Rocky G, extra sweet. Macabu bread, no crust.
Macabu bread, no crust.
Yeah. So yeah,
what's
so,
on that cinnamon?
Is this still still list item one?
Oh yeah, no, that's two actually. Part two was fine. Actually, they go to so first is the hearing, then part two they go down and actually find the.
Well, not to disturb your list, but isn't there maybe it's a sub part of part one or a pre part to part two where there's a brief discussion before they actually go
pre part
because. That, well, that's what you're talking about. That's what the hearing, I guess, is about.
Yeah.
Right?
Do they? Whoa. Here we go.
Jesse, go on sneezy. Are you going to sneeze again?
It will be when I have some power.
Oh, there he goes again.
The slimy tentacle things went half bad.
The problem is Jesse is slightly allergic to cogent points.
Yeah.
So I was like whenever Dan or I are about to make a cogent point, Jesse has to find a way to disturb it.
You didn't win their hearts and minds. You simply demanded their obedience.
Hugo. Did that second part and the one that you're talking about, did that take place outside of the hearing room?
No, I think it was all in the... You're right, yeah. It was in the hearing.
So I...
And thank you for... Jesus Christ. Thank you for...
Our line will be diluted, but never truly extinguished on your home world.
Thank you for reminding me about the way the hearing was structured, because it was a little confusing the first time through. The second listen through, it was clearer, because it seemed like I was like, what is the scenario they have here? It is clearly
you could search 1,000 light years before you would find another such world.
Just in case people didn't realize, Jesse sneezed again. There's only so much audio editing can do.
That might be it.
So the scenario is we have this historian person who wants to get access to or see if there are more of these logs, right? She's acquired some logs, was able... And
she was it was sent to her 6 years ago by an anonymous source.
So somebody somehow got her some logs, which is interesting in its own right.
Right.
They're
mysterious
very intriguing.
Log.
Very intriguing. She
a
wants
log
to go see
source.
If there are more of those logs. Okay, reasonable request.
The logs are vivid.
At first,
vivid logs.
Sulu seems very antagonistic to this idea.
Yeah.
But then very quickly becomes convinced that, okay, it's fine. So I'm guessing she was asking, was it like asking an admiral to order Sulu in particular? I don't know. I was a little confused by that bit.
How dare you suggest such a thing?
But they got us there in the end. They got us there in the end that they decided, okay, Sulu's cool with giving Dr. Lear, was her name?
Dr. Lear.
A ride to SETI Alpha 5!
So this, yeah, right, to...
SETI Alpha 5.
On the Excelsior? Is it the Excelsior?
Yeah, on the Excelsior.
She says it with decidedly much less...
Because Sulu is the Excelsior captain.
Yeah, and if instead of Khan, if it was this hearing lady... who got trapped on SETI Alpha 5 in Star Trek 2, she'd be all like, this is SETI Alpha 5.
SETI Alpha 5.
SETI Alpha 5!
This is SETI Alpha 5.
Khan Noonien Singh.
For general timeline stuff, Kirk died 3 months ago. The anonymous source sent the logs to Dr. Lear six years ago.
Really?
Tuvok is an ensign at the time, and Khan and his followers left SETI Alpha 5 less than 10 years ago. So these
Star
are
Trek
all...
2 was 10 years ago. Space Seed was 20 years
Tuvok is
prior.
An ensign at this point, and then by Voyager, he's still only a lieutenant.
Does he start out as a lieutenant?
But he's also he's taught at the academy. Yeah,
that's the thing.
He's still just a lieutenant.
The thing is, people
most intriguing.
People often forget. Tuvok mentions on Voyager. Tuvok mentions that he took a long break from Starfleet.
So he was
in Starfleet for a while, and then he took a long break to teach and do some other things. And I think there's even a couple storylines around that. And then I forget, maybe even Janeway was instrumental in bringing him back. I can't quite recall. All right.
Do not lie to me.
I shan't. All right. So that's the item number two.
Was the finding the logs.
Okay, finding the logs.
And yeah, there had to be some sort of like some decisions that had to be made of what defined
what is this
a
list of again? This is a list of things that happened in the episode?
This is a list of your basic parts.
Okay, the basic
parts.
Okay. I mean, I know you said that before, and I'm only now realizing I don't entirely know what that means.
Yeah, it's kind of like you could...
it's not acts.
No, it's not acts. It's the parts. The parts that you can break it down into these parts.
That's the best part.
I still got to get that sound.
That's the best part.
That's a line from The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, that's the best part.
A very creepy line.
Who says that? These are all just like these. You can divide these into these amount of ways, and one could say that makes sense.
Okay.
That's what this is.
That sounds convincing.
Yeah. What one could say.
Yeah. It's a damn miracle.
All right. So
part number three.
Okay, one is hearing, two finding logs. Number three. Now we're inside the junk. Khan is talking about the place. That's part three. He's all like
SETI Alpha 5.
He's all like, we're in this place and it's so cool.
And you can hear all the bugs. The Foley's really awesome.
And this Khan talking. We're introduced to Khan, and Khan is just marveling at his world. Okay. Number four, we meet Ivan.
Yeah.
So Khan and Ivan, we meet, discover who Ivan is. That's part four. Part five. We meet Ursula and Mado. Okay.
Yeah.
And so with Ivan, he's talking about building shit. With Ursula and Mado, they're talking about like medical stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number six, we meet Marla. Now, we've already met Marla, but this is when she gets introduced. And
Marla revisited.
So, yeah. So this is like where it's like Ivan, they're talking about. We sort of get figure out Ivan's like his dude, mm-hmm. like his right, almost like his right-hand man or something, or a secret assassin or whatever you want to call it. Then we see Ursula and Mado. We find out their roles. We see that Marla, there's trouble in Paradise already.
Okay. Oh,
Paradise being SETI Alpha 5 and their relationship. Yeah. Because
Paradise.
Right from the start, she's like, I don't want to live with you. I want to live in my own place. And she's like, these people like are just taking my shit without asking me.
Yeah.
You know. And then she's like, and she's pissed.
And also calling you like my lord and stuff. And she's like a little weirded out by that.
Yeah. Dude.
And it sort of shows us that like Khan doesn't really get it because, you know, she's like, they don't respect me.
Because he's from the 90s.
She's like, they're not going to respect me if they're just like moving my shit around. If they're not, basically they're not talking to me. If I'm living with you, they're going to see me as your wife, not as someone who's like their own person. And they're just doing things based upon what you say. And he's like, well, they'll respect you. Cause I tell them. And
it's like, tell them to respect
you. Yeah. And it's like,
just like, that's not how it
that's
works.
Not, yeah,
answer,
that's not,
dude,
how, yeah,
wrong
right.
Answer.
That's like, kind of the opposite.
Yeah. Right. And so she's already annoyed by that. Number seven, we meet Joaquin and Joachim.
Wow.
And then that leads into a fight. This is still part seven.
Yeah.
So there's the fight. So we get introduced. Joaquin, we remember from the Space Seed.
Yes.
Joachim is the first non-fully augment in the whole situation.
In their group. Yeah.
In their group.
They imply that there's lots of others on Earth, which is that, play that line again, because you played that line about our line being diluted.
Oh, yeah, right.
The diluted.
Our line will be diluted, but never truly extinguished on your home world.
That could have been a diluted or diluted. You know, that could
be diluted. Oh, yeah.
A whole new game. You want to play right now? Diluted or diluted.
Oh, we could. We could play that.
This is Patrick.
Our line will be diluted, but never truly extinguished
what you
on
that?
Your home world.
Well, yeah, because
world.
It would be diluted. It would be diluted.
Yeah.
And she's saying diluted.
Diluted.
Our line will be diluted, but never truly extinguished on your home world.
You would be fine saying diluted, but she's saying diluted.
Diluted.
Diluted. Diluted.
Yeah. I mean, what does that really mean, though? If an augment...
Diluted.
I mean, I know what it means diluted...
means you add water to it.
I mean, I mean... aren't
I'm gonna make a bunch of I'm gonna make a bunch of It's Got Star Trek t-shirts. That's our first merch is gonna be it's gonna be the It's Got Star Trek logo, and it's just gonna be Jesse doing a thumbs up saying like, yeah, add water to it.
So augments aren't, they're not like cyborgs, they're just a collection of all the best people.
They were genetically engineered.
They were genetically engineered, but they talked about selective breeding as if they kind of do what they do with dogs, right?
Like, yeah, but no.
They add extra science mojo to them?
Look, they're not clear about it, partly because Space Seed is where they don't fully understand and grasp these things.
It's more than what they just do with dogs and plants. Computers and stuff them with science.
I want to tell the audience at home that Dan was doing some sort of gesture with his hands that did not look like doing science.
That was doing science.
That was that was violence.
You were doing something else.
You were doing violence.
For sake, Ivan.
In Space Seed, since it's still fresh, they definitely leaned into the selective breeding form of eugenics, mm-hmm. which was the original version. However, in all the subsequent ones, they really do allude to the genetic engineering, particularly on Enterprise with the augments. And I enjoyed this reference because they're laying a little foundation for the backstory of La'an. On Strange New Worlds, because La'an is one of these people she's like, I'm not a monster. That she's descended from these augments, and her genes have presumably been diluted in the eugenic sense, which is, by the way, not really how genes work.
If you go by just what they say in this episode, which is it makes it just sound like it's selective breeding, which if that were the case, then there's no such thing as like augments aren't anything other than just like, there's no such thing as diluting augment ability, because like augment is just slang term for somebody who's got all the best stuff put together. And it's not really diluted.
I would disagree in the sense that I think if you were talking to dog breeders, they might use that term if you bred some dogs with some gooby gooby.
I don't really know much about it, so I shouldn't pretend.
Well, it's one of the tricky things.
Dear gods.
It's a tricky topic, the idea of eugenics and genetically breeding super people and all that. It's useful in a literary sense. In a scientific sense, it gets more complicated.
What fresh hell is this, do you suppose?
And the philosophies and all that stuff is worthy of a discussion, but this is intended for more of a literary purpose.
Right. So you got Joaquin and his son Joachim, and then everyone's picking on Joachim, and the kids are kind of stupid because they're just assuming that like because when he asked them why are you beating up on this kid, they're like,
he's a half breed, a mongrel.
like it's like, duh, he's a half breed. Of course we're supposed to beat up on him. It's like okay, if you had like thousands of people and half of them were augments and half of them weren't augments, it's not right to pick on one for being one and not the other, but you'd understand it more. There's more of that tribal warfare going on because you got a large group of people. This is a very small group of people. It's already been established that they can't procreate yet into full augmentation. There's one of these guys, and it's like, it's obvious that Khan likes all of these people, like wants all of these people to succeed. So why did these kids think that they could just offer that up as an explanation to Khan, and he'd be like, oh yeah, you know, that's you're right.
My explanation.
He is a mongrel, but like, you gotta feel sorry for him. Like, it's not.
Is that what he said?
No, he didn't say that. I'm saying.
Because you're like, yeah, he is a mongrel. You gotta feel sorry for him.
No, I'm saying, like, that's what they kind of expect him to say when they say that. And like, I say it makes more sense in large groups when you have tensions that have built between large groups over time. But if it's just this small group, you're not gonna. I mean. Yeah, I can see the kids picking on what Joachim. I can understand them doing that.
Because he's different.
But when they go to explain why to Khan, most kids would probably just be like, he said we were stupid.
He's weird.
He said he called me a name. Like, they would come up with a different reason instead of coming up with like, well, he's a mongrel, duh. You know, I don't know.
My explanation.
Like, that shit's not going to fly with Khan.
No, my explanation is that when you see these things, when you see certain decisions made by Khan in Space Seed and Wrath of Khan in this episode. I think it's a very good way of pointing out that we can't pay attention to what these people keep saying. They keep saying they're perfect and that they don't fall to the instincts of regular humans and all this stuff, but they keep doing it. They keep doing exactly that because you're right, Dan, 100%. If these children were truly genetic super geniuses, they would maybe even just out of self-preservation logic out that, you know, like, oh, even if I think this, I shouldn't say it.
Right, exactly.
But they don't because they are all genetically engineered. And the thematic point is that this is not a good thing, that it disrupts the personalities of these people. But I should back up for a second to point out that what they kind of do in this first episode is they introduce what I presume will be somewhat of a theme throughout the series, which is this nature versus nurture, right? Because we know they have, whether it's selective breeding genes, whatever, they've been designed to be quote unquote stronger, smarter, faster, etc. And then we see what actually happens.
Yeah, Khan says, he goes, when he talks to the kids, he goes, we're superior to them, to the earth, the people on earth, not just because of the genetic modifications they made to us, but because we are not subject to the instincts that divided them from one another, that drove them to fight endless wars. We will not repeat their mistakes. On this world, all who follow me are the same. We live and die together with and for one another. There is no other way. So this is like, sounds like really nice and enlightened on Khan's part, you know, that we don't need to be bioengineered to be superior. But there is a narcissistic aspect to it as well. He goes into this assumption that they will be superior. What he's saying also, the other side of what he's saying is he's saying it doesn't take perfect humans to create a perfect society. It just takes the mind of one human in particular, in this case, Khan, to make a perfect world.
Well, sure. And it's another example, which I think we've seen often with dictators. I think you've seen it with Adolf Hitler and Stalin and others, where they will declare some sort of rule of inclusion-exclusion rule, right? Whether it's a manufactured race or ethnicity or religion or some other category. And then they will, on their own whim, have exceptions to that rule for people they happen to like.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Right?
Everybody. There's a whole list.
And to them, they think, well, I'm all-powerful. I can do whatever I want. And I'm bestowing whiteness on this person, or Aryan-ness, or genetic superior, and whatever. But then the problem is other people are like, wait a second, like, we were totally buying into this whole, we're part of the superior club, but why are you letting this guy in?
Right.
And it's, again, another example, I think very nicely illustrated here, of how you can show that these people, they're saying one thing, but they're just human.
Right.
They're just kind of, if anything, they're more aggravatingly human because of their enhancements.
So at this part seven, it seems like Khan kind of takes Joachim under his wing at this point. And it seemed, and I'm wondering if there's going to be something, because remember, I've only heard the first episode. I wonder if there's going to be a thing where like Khan kind of adopts, almost, like, not officially, but Joachim starts thinking of Khan as his father. And maybe Joaquin starts to get all pissed off because it's like, that's my kid, you know, but I don't know. Who knows? I could be wrong.
New podcast segment from Dan called "That's My Kid."
That's my kid. That's my kid.
You got to make a theme song for that.
That's my kid.
That's my kid.
That's my kid. That's my kid, not yours.
So that was 7 of 13. We're not going to get through all of them to the break, but I think we can get through a number 8 at least.
Yes. The number 8. After that, we meet Hugo. And that is an interesting character as well.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by Hugo.
Yes, yeah. Because so Hugo from the start is basically saying, like, you know, we're not even past the first day and he's already saying we won this shit. Like, this doesn't, I don't see shit. We don't have anything yet. And then as Khan points out, it's like, you're looking for what you have now in your hands. I'm seeing the potential in front of us for what can be made. It's like, we have all the building blocks here. Right. That's the important part. It's not important that we have like a banquet of food and in front of us right now. It's like, we have all the material with which to do it, but you're expecting everything to happen this second. And that's like, on the one hand,
so you think Hugo's being a Debbie Downer?
He is. You can understand his perspective of, though, it's, he does have a point, because it's like, look, we haven't even started this shit and you're already proclaiming victory.
And by the way, I thought it was interesting that he made the point. He was like, all right, so we had to flee Earth. That didn't work out the way you said it was going to work out.
Right.
Then we were going to steal a starship. That didn't work out the way you said it was going to.
Right.
Why should I assume it's going to work this fucking third time?
Right, because Khan is taking the stance of...
Spoiler alert, it totally
doesn't work
out.
No.
Right. And so Khan's taking this stance of like, it's like, yes, he's right. All the building blocks are there. And Hugo should be a little bit more positive about the future because Hugo's not looking beyond today. Yeah. But Khan is making the assumption that everything is going according to plan. Like you just said, that hasn't been the case. But it seems like Hugo at one point, so Hugo's talking shit, right? And then Ivan like says to him, he goes, "You must allow me to deal with him." And Khan says, "No, I chose him for a reason and I will handle him." Now, do you think the reason Khan chose Hugo was to make an example out of him, to let early on, to let people know, you do not fuck with me?
You know?
Like, because like he knew, he might have known that Hugo was going to. Now, first of all, did Hugo actually really betray him? He didn't. He was talking when Ivan threw him off the cliff at the end. Was that ordered from Khan? Was Khan, you think Khan was like, if he starts talking shit, get rid of him? Or do you think that Ivan was going on his own, like a vigilante style?
I think that's a very good question, Dan. We're going to answer it when we get back from the break. So Jesse, Dan, think of your answers. And we'll be right back.
I wish you both luck.
May it be long and glorious.
Penis.
Yeah.
And we're back.
You brought me here to be your broodmare. I wasn't aware then that you had ulterior motives when you brought me here.
Ulterior motives. So we got to answer that question.
That's always the deal.
So I can.
And the question was, to recap, for those who don't remember, because of so many commercials during that break.
I thought exactly.
The question Dan posed.
Oh, the commerce.
And he's still in the middle of the list, but the question he posed was whether or not Ivan killing. What's his name? Hugo? Yes. I was about to say Hogan for some reason. Ivan killing Hugo was
Ivan killing Hugo.
Whether or not that was ordered by Khan. So
it is my intention to find the truth.
Dan, what do you think?
Okay,
what's your view? Now, since you posed the question.
Now, just so you know, we're jumping to, because this is another section of the list. So I'm. This that we're combining those. I'll mention it just for the sake of mentioning
it.
But so at the end, the interaction before he gets thrown off the cliff, Hugo goes, "I could use your help, but I doubt Khan can spare you." And Ivan goes, "He cannot." Hugo goes, "And you never tire of doing his bidding?" And Ivan says, "The day he led us out of bondage, we swore to live and die by his command. That will never change." And Hugo says, "For pity's sake, Ivan, we were at war." And Ivan says, "We still are. What did you tell Khan to convince him that you could be trusted?" Hugo says, "That I'd build his bloody Colosseum, of course." Good night, Ivan. What are you? Let go of me. And then so he didn't say anything that bad.
By the way, you should really be a voiceover artist.
You
should be on one on the next season of Star Trek Khan.
What are you? Go. What are you? Let go of me. So, like what he said, it sounded like he wasn't exactly super.
Dan Glavis.
Hugo didn't sound super psyched about doing Khan shit, but he wasn't straight up like fuck that guy.
I also what they're doing here narratively is they're setting Ivan up as a true supporter, a true diehard.
Right.
Or maybe he's only doing for his own purposes, but I think it's one or the other thing. It's either he's getting rid of Hugo for his own purposes, but pretending it's like for Khan, or it's because Ivan basically is like, you are clearly not into this. Because what Hugo has done is Hugo has gone to the boss and told the boss, you're totally right. I'm totally convinced by what you said. Not just I'll agree to do what you say reluctantly. Hugo, when he talked to Khan, when Khan gave him the choice, Hugo was like, dude, I'm in. Just let me know what to do and I'll do it. It'll get done. But now when he's talking to a colleague, Ivan, he's like, fucking guy.
Right.
Ivan's like, dude, I'm also think you're shady, and I'm going to use this as an opportunity to get rid of you.
Well, the reason I was wondering if Khan maybe instructed, like, be like, Ivan, you're my eyes and ears. If he's out of line, fuck him up. Maybe Ivan took it too far. I don't know. But the reason I thought of that is because when Ivan says, you mustn't allow me to deal with him, and Khan says, no, I chose him for a reason, and I will handle him. Now, it seems like Ivan overstepped his bounds, but I think so. I think Khan kept Hugo around just so he could show people what happens if you disobey him.
Right.
Because you don't want the tension to build up among hundreds of or dozens of people over time for it to explode one day in some revolution. You want from the very start, you want to establish that this is what happens if you fuck with me before it gets out of hand.
Yes.
And that's what he was doing. Because he even says, he tells him, he's like, you know, you can either leave and never come back or stay and never question my shit, which is he's off on the dictator thing, like from the very start. That's how a dictator works.
That's all he knows.
The thing with Ivan, for me, is and I'm very interested to see where this goes, because again, we haven't listened ahead. Is Ivan doing his own power play, and that's why he's getting rid of Hugo? Because I think that Ivan overstepped. If you ask me, I don't think Khan ordered this.
No, I think
Khan is going to be aggravated that Hugo is dead. Whether he knows Ivan did it or not, I think he's going to be aggravated because his reason, it could be what you're saying, Dan. It could be that he wanted him there as the excuse or as the example. If that's the case, then that's done. Then he no longer needs him because he already used him as an example. And him being dead might further strengthen that example. On the other hand, it could be that he had his own other thing going, because that's how these Khan types work, is they've got their chess pieces.
Yeah.
And they get aggravated when the chess pieces don't follow orders, right? Mm-hmm. And again, we see this over and over, that Khan makes this mistake of assuming somebody's under his sway, and then they do something that he doesn't expect. Like in Space Seed, he totally trusts Marla MacGyver's, and she's the one who ends up sort of semi-betraying him and freeing Kirk, right?
Yeah.
So this is a similar thing, maybe, where he doesn't have as much control over this people as he thinks. Because again, like I was saying in the previous segment, they talk a good game, but they're not necessarily living that game.
All right. So like I had said a second ago, that about like Khan told Hugo, he's like, don't question me, which is like right starting from the start, a dictator. I was making me think Klingons are all about challenging authority in a way, right? Because like the way you take control of a ship,
it's like just be about being like the mightiest.
Yeah, it's like you can become captain of the ship by like getting into a one-on-one with,
like,
your
taking over.
If you want to be the captain of your ship, you can just challenge the captain to a fight, and if you win the fight, you're like the captain. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the deal?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, sort of. It's not quite as
cut and dry.
That's like Mirror Universe style, where like everyone, you kill the captain and everyone goes up in rank one.
But that happened in Lower Decks though, too.
Yeah, no, but in Klingon, that definitely does happen in the Klingon culture.
It's saying, like, in that way, Klingons kind of have an interesting, like, interesting non-dictatorship. Whatever, how do you pronounce it?
It's might is right.
But the Klingons have an interest. While it's not great to live in a system where like someone can take your command by fucking challenging you to a fight, because that's kind of like obnoxious to have to like worry about that. On the other hand, that's not a dictatorship. That's like it's like if you're better than that guy, it's a meritocracy in a certain kind of sense. Yeah.
Well, and also the premise of that system, if it's working as it's intended, the logic behind it, of course, is that if the person at the top is sufficiently skilled at expressing their power, then no one would dare challenge them, both because they don't want to because things are going well, and because they think they would fail. So
it will be when I have some power.
At the same time, if somebody is never tested, kind of goes to what you're suggesting, Dan, then maybe people get suspicious. But again, Hugo makes some very good points. But we'll see what the disposition of Hugo is.
And we learn how fragile his dictatorship is. Like you said, Patrick, he doesn't have people quite under his sway as he thinks he does. Yeah. And so like that's another sort of like weakness, is like, don't challenge my authority. I mean, that's kind of admitting like this is a very brittle sort of like structure we have here. So that's number 8. Number 9, after we're meeting Hugo, Marla talks to Ursula and Madeau. Mm-hmm. And that's when she finds out
this very interesting twist that I'm excited about, because it's part of what makes this an engaging story. Is this isn't as simple, nor would we have expected it to be, but this is not as simple as like, oh, just Khan puttering around on SETI Alpha 5 until shit goes bad, right? There's these other aspects to it. They want to start an empire, but they can't make new humans.
Right.
Or maybe they can, but they don't know for sure yet. Because we learn that the augment females in the 90s that were being genetically manipulated were having all their eggs taken from them in infancy.
I think I pity them.
It's fucked up, dude.
Yeah, it's super fucked up.
It's really
damn it.
It's and it's, I mean, again,
no help at all.
It plays into the sexual politics of that era, both the imagined era of the 1990s from the 1960s, the actual 1990s.
They need to study their gametes.
Yeah, they like the male gametes, because typically they're like, oh, these guys can shoot jizz all over the place. We're totally down with that.
Yeah.
Does this look
like the spoils we were promised.
In multiple ways, this is a very Jurassic Park situation because they're stealing all the eggs from the females and they're using, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
Well, it's
a big old pile of poop.
What fresh hell is this, do you suppose?
No, it's just because it's like the whole, like, the, you know, I kept thinking about the whole, like, Dodson.
Yeah. See, nobody cares.
There's embryos, frozen embryos.
We got Dodson here.
I'm intrigued by this this plot line, and it adds an interesting layer to it, especially because Khan does not deny when MacGyver says, "You brought me here to be your plan B."
Yeah, because he pauses and he changes his tactic. Yeah. He goes, "Why are you here?" Yeah. Instead of answering, he goes, "Why are you here?" He like does a reversal. Yeah. And then she just gives her position away. She's like, "I'm here because I want to be the first to study this empire as it's being made," you know? And so it's like, and then he's like, "I guess we were both."
And he's like, "Now you're telling me there's not going to be any empire babies?"
Yeah.
What's
right.
going on here?
Right.
It appears we were both mistaken in our assumptions.
So they both have some. So right from the very beginning, their relationship is built on half truths.
Yes.
Because she's there. She digs him, but she's there really because she wants to further make her mark, basically.
And by the way, is because her other option would have been to be court-martialed and sent to New Zealand.
Right.
Oh, she would have been sent to one of those New Zealand rehabilitation places like Tom Paris had to go to.
And he's fond of her as well. Yeah. And he'd probably prefer, for many reasons, other than the fact that you don't want this great incestuous kingdom where there's one mother for all of time. You know, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But also, and he wants
Adam and Eve.
Yeah, well, we...
How long do you get sent to New Zealand?
Oh, and it's when you do some weird Starfleet business?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But also, you know, he wants to create full augments. But, like, I think he would prefer not to have to make her, like, have to make a bunch of babies for the rest. He would prefer her to be happier. But at the same time, it was a tactical move he made. So they're both like, their relationship from the start, it's not, this isn't a slow decline of their relationship. It seems like the relationship is fucked from the beginning.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, which was true in Space Seed as well.
Yeah.
They've done a very good job of giving her more agency than in Space Seed.
Yeah.
Space Seed, Marla MacGyver's, I think, had more agency than maybe your average female character might have had in TV.
Well, Kirk didn't think much
she
of her.
She wasn't bringing the coffee. That was
yeah,
sure.
Well, Kirk didn't. Yeah, Kirk was annoyed by her, but she was able to talk back to Kirk and correct him when he kept mispronouncing her name.
No.
So yeah, it is nice that they give her agency here, and I find it very fascinating how they are setting up this romance, because we see, of course, the beginning of it in Space Seed. In Star Trek II, we hear reference to MacGyver's.
Right.
She's no longer on the scene.
She dies somehow.
Yeah, but clearly Khan really cared for her.
Yeah.
And significantly more so than at the end of Space Seed. I think he's intrigued by her. He's attracted to her. So I part of this story presumably is going to fill in for this romance. And I'm
in Star Trek II, like he makes a point of that. Yeah. The fact that she's gone.
It's part of why he's mad at Kirk.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's part of the deal.
Because one disconnect between Star Trek II and Space Seed, a long-standing disconnect, and we commented on it last week, I think Jesse particularly vociferously, how kind of weird it is that these people violently take over a starship, and Kirk is all like, you guys, I'm going to give you a planet.
Yeah,
right.
And we're going to, and Khan seems,
come back and do it again.
And Khan seems excited about it.
Yeah.
And here again, he seems excited about it. And he's like, look, this was not my, he states it outright. He's like, this is not my number one plan, but hey, starting a whole fucking
planet.
It suits him. But now, of course, we've learned there's this barrier that you need people to have a population.
Mm-hmm.
You can, that's a new quote, that's a new phrase. Patrick coined that phrase. I coined that phrase.
Which phrase?
You need people to have a population.
For yeah,
people,
that's
for a population.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, you ain't never thought of it that way, and ain't nobody else, because I'm a genius and I coined that phrase.
You are.
Copyright.
You're very, very smart.
Yeah,
trademark.
Yeah.
Have you ever really loved anyone? Is love too frightening for you to imagine?
I think she makes an interesting point here, because
he says like an empire is not built on love.
No empire was ever built on love, which I take issue with.
Yeah.
I think many empires might have.
I mean, what kind of
motivated by love?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, either a love of people or person or stuff.
What about love of building an empire?
Love of just like the state.
I mean, I like playing Age of Mythology, which is kind of like Age of Empires.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what you're talking about.
Yeah, sort of.
Those games
sort of
are cool to play.
Yeah. But Khan and MacGyver's, again, we'll see where it goes, but what I'm enjoying so far is it's very realistic, this attraction between them. It's continuing what I thought that they did a pretty good job in Space Seed, which was she is not a genetically superior person or augmented, whatever term you want to use, but he still seems to actually respect her. And I think part of that respect is that she does stand up to him, even if in Space Seed, sometimes she immediately then backs down or you know, goes along with him a little more quickly than we might otherwise expect. She does push back.
And how sad you are. How small.
And she pushes back in a way that these other people do not.
Yeah.
Because these other people keep saying Milord and all this other stuff to Khan, even if they're talking shit behind his back, because that's the other thing. We learn more and more that a lot of these people are kind of talking a little shit behind Khan's back, which is not something we saw in Space Seed.
He is very optimistic. Like, when we first go up to see Khan, he goes, "I have what I came for. There is no beginning. There is no end. There's only the eternal, ever evolving, with each incarnation growing closer to perfection. Perfect expression of its essence." That's him surveying the land when we first see him. And he's making a lot of assumptions about like how smoothly this is all going to work out, you know, and like we've mentioned a few times before, whether it's just like if he's that arrogant about his ability or if it's just like blind confidence or like maybe like Trip Tucker III in Shuttle Pod 1, where he was like, "Well, I'm going to tell Hoshi's parents in person, like how great she is. Cause we're not going to die, even though there's like almost no chance of us living."
As I said, when we discussed Shuttle Pod 1, I tend to be more biased towards if you're going to make the error in understanding how things are working, maybe the hopeful side is the one more likely to lead to a positive outcome.
I guess because
it makes you aware of paying attention for potential opportunity.
And the difference is, though, I guess in Trip Tucker III and Malcolm's situation, what they were shooting for was to not die.
Yeah,
like Khan's not shooting for "I just want to live." He's like, "We're going to make a more perfect or a closer to perfect expression of essence," or whatever the fuck he was saying.
Yeah.
More perfect. I know that's like,
it's okay.
I know it's
a more perfect union.
I know it's in the thing, but it is a weird.
It's kind of like the unique and the modifiers, which I'm always harping on about.
But the opposite will be true if they can't figure out how to get these super women pregnant. Yeah. The land will grow more perfect, but the people will not. So you know, they'll be less perfect.
They'll live a long time, but not forever.
They'll all be incestuousized. Hilarious.
Sorry, that did actually.
You can see it's different. By the time you get to like Star Trek Wrath of Khan, Khan has this group of hardened loyalists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's different now. And I guess we'll see what happens.
Mm.
Yeah. It'll whittle down. Like,
yeah, maybe he's taking that into account. Like he's like, "There's going to be problems, but I'll figure it out."
Although I don't think so. I think that's the thing is Khan always thinks that every challenge is going to immediately be overcome or make him stronger or whatever. He wants to be a myth. And he kind of tries to insert himself into myth by bringing up this myth of Cortez, you know, of Hernan. Was it Hernan Cortez?
Yeah.
Hernan Cortez.
And this was an oft told tale that Hernan Cortez burned all his ships in order to convince his people that they had no choice, but there was no going
Mexico
home.
City.
When that's not quite what happened. And actually, Jesse, I had a question for you because as Marla MacGyver's describes it, so in reality, Cortez scuttled his ships. He didn't
scuttle
burn them. He scuttled them.
Scuttle batteries.
Made them unsailworthy. I don't know if he left one alone. Because she says he left one alone. Are you aware of that, Jesse? Because I was trying to look it up.
I'm not sure.
Because I didn't hear that he left one alone. But I do know that in the real history of things, it's not quite what the myth says. Cortez was expressly told not to go to the Yucatan Peninsula to explore. He the governor of Cuba forbade, rescinded his license to do that. He hired a bunch of ships and ran off on his own anyway.
Right.
And one of the reasons why he scuttled his ships was because they were all sailors, but he needed like ground troops and sailors, because of the way the union rules work or whatever. Like they were just going to stay on the ships. They weren't going to like leave unless there's no ships to be on.
You had to take out the ships.
And the other thing that Cortez did was he didn't have a mandate to go exploring, but the way Spanish law worked was that Spanish towns and cities could make independent political decisions. So he founded a town on the beach that didn't have any buildings. He just declared that a town existed.
Whoops, sorry.
He declared that a town existed and then had the town hire him to explore the Yucatan Peninsula. So it was a weird legal mumbo jumbo that he was, that's why he destroyed the ships. But anyway, the point is the real history is, of course.
How clever you are.
Yes. The real history is in some ways more interesting, but it's also more convoluted and less mythic. Less mythic. And we can see here, we have this interesting pair where Marla MacGyvers is a historian who presumably at some core level wants to have or pursues, even if she understands she can never quite know the exact truth, she wants to pursue the truth and construct the truth. That's her ultimate goal. And she's hanging out with this dude who's all about myth-making. Yeah. So I found that another intriguing angle that they're taking here.
He probably knew that the story of Hernan Cortez, was fake. And he probably picked the story just because he thought he could use it to inspire people. But like, why would he tell Marla MacGyver's of all try to tell that to her if he knew it was a fake story, which makes me think maybe he didn't know. Either way, it doesn't make him seem too smart. Or
Khan doesn't. I'm going to say this again. I'm going to say this probably repeatedly over the next few weeks. Khan is not as smart as he thinks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like
he's got like confirmation bias.
I'm not saying
confirmation bias.
I'm not saying he's like dumb because he didn't know it. What I'm saying is he's not as smart as he thinks. If in both cases, because if he knew it was a fake story and he knew you could use it to inspire people, great, but why would he try that move against Marla MacGyvers? Mm-hmm. If he didn't know that was a fake story, that's not speaking too highly of his ultra intelligence either. He would be best off if he didn't know that he was an augment. That would be better off. Mm-hmm. Like, if he didn't know that he had these sort of like skills from the start, because like he's making all these assumptions about his ability based upon the fact that he knows he's an augment.
You know, I think that's a really interesting angle to and maybe it's an angle that they'll pursue a little bit here. I had never really considered that. You're right. Mm-hmm. That the ignorance to his skills may actually have made him a more successful person, because so many of the mistakes that Khan makes throughout the entire arc of his tale in the Star Trek franchise are related to arrogance and ignorance.
Yeah.
Arrogance in having too much confidence in his planning, and then ignorance as to how the world actually works. That's how he's defeated in Star Trek 2. That's how he's defeated in Space Seed. And we'll see what happens over the course of the next few episodes.
It's kind of sort of not really, but a little bit like how they say, you know, like good leaders are ones that like don't want to be leaders, you know, because they're not trying. It's not the same, but it's kind of like this idea that if you're sort of, there's a certain ignorance to the process, or either there's an ignorance to the process or a part of the process that you don't wish to take part in. Just sort of like, you know, whether it's you don't know how smart you are or whether you're like, I don't want to be a leader. Fuck that. That sucks. It's like, well, you're better then, because people who want to be leaders or seek power. I don't know. It's just,
That's a core part of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. The third book, Life, the Universe and Everything. Mm-hmm. But it's also a philosophy that goes back, I think, at least as far as the Greeks, if not further. But yes, that the people who are capable of gaining power are the people who should not have it.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who don't want power are often a better position to wield it.
So nine, I said, that was Marla talks to Ursula and Madone.
Oh, yeah, we're still in this list.
Yeah. And that's fine. Awesome. Yeah, it is awesome. The less I put in the list, the more we've talked about it. So Marla and Ursula Madone talking, Marla learns, she gets pissed. Number 10, Ivan doubts Hugo and Khan gets close to Joachim. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, I can't remember specifically what happens there. It's just Ivan is expressing his doubts about Hugo, like I said, and then Khan like makes Joachim his champion. You can start to tell that Joachim, and you learn that actually from the very start before we even get onto the planet, because the first log is he's talking about how he's being really gentle with Joachim.
Yeah.
So it makes it sound like he's becoming like a father figure to this character. 11, Khan finds Marla, and this is when this is the flip around.
One of those crazy flip arounds.
It's the flip around.
Classic Star Trek flip around.
It's time to do the flip around. Flip around. Flip around.
Flip around.
It's time to do the flip around. Yes, it is. Khan finds Marla sending logs to Kirk and they both get mad.
Yeah.
And so it's because this is
well,
like
she wasn't sending love. She was asking for help.
Yeah,
she
sorry, that's what I meant. Help. Yeah, she was calling for help from Kirk. And
she's like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, the thing is she's doing that specifically because of what she learned. Yes. But at the same time, part of the reason she wants her own place is not just because she wants respect. She wants to have these own private. Mm-hmm. She wants to be able to talk outside when she wants. She wants to have her own secret life that isn't simply privacy. Yeah. She wants something. She knows that some of the stuff that she wants to do on her own, Khan might disapprove of. And so they both find out that they don't trust each other. Then there's 12, which we talked about, when Ivan throws Hugo off the cliff. We already discovered that. Mm-hmm. That's the next part. And then the final part is Dr. Lear is pissed. She doesn't have enough time to organize the tapes, which I don't understand why she can't. They can't just collect them and put them on the ship and then she organize them later. Yeah, like
this
why?
This is one of those. I think we just have to buy this somewhat strange artificial constraint that they put on it. You only have 5 days or. The computer can organize them.
Right.
I mean, and then the computer can organize them.
If the computer can if the computer can organize them, then it can like put them all in its databanks verbatim, so you can look at them later.
It would have been nice if they could have maybe come up with a different, a different thing here. Although I do like that, at least not yet. They're not like, oh, you have to stop because the Klingons are on their way or something. You know, they could have come up with something like that, which maybe would be a little less. I don't know. Maybe that'd be better. Honestly,
Always with the Klingons. So they have 73 people left alive,
And 30 of them are women.
Oh my gosh,
that's what we learned last week on Space Seed. So thank you for the list. That was a good list. Mm-hmm. The duty or no duty. We need to do in a second. Mm-hmm. But I did want to mention the whole interesting factor is where there's commercials inserted into this, of course, mm-hmm. right? Which is fine. It's a podcast. And the whole point is, you know, it's like any other media property. They do want to make a profit. Okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. It's just, I know the commercials are auto-added based on whoever, you know, location and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just really funny to go from like, Tuvok saying some dramatic line and the music getting all dramatic and then all of a sudden it's like Sunday NFL okay,
I know, take out a little bit.
It took me out a little bit, or like at one point it was all like when Marla MacGyver learns that her eggs are stolen that the other people had their eggs stolen. It's like I forget what the commercial was, but it was an incongruous commercial.
That kind of reminds me of, do you remember the Dana Carvey show? The Dana Carvey show. He had a sketch comedy show way back in the day. It only lasted like a couple episodes, if that much. But they had a 9:30 spot or something like that. I think they were like directly after Home Improvement or something like that.
Yeah, right.
And they were saying that one of the problems was that I think when they premiered, the episode of Home Improvement was something about where the kid Jake or whatever his name was, JJ.
Was
or
it a
John,
very special episode?
Yeah, it was a very special episode where he thought he had like cancer or something that. They were like, and it was like the episode ended with something like him saying like, but I don't want to die, Dad, or something like that. And then they go to break and they show this commercial for this goofy ass like sketch comedy show. It's Dana Carvey show. I'm sorry. It made me think about that. One of my favorite lines in this episode.
I was going to say, can I guess? I shouldn't guess.
Okay. Well, you can guess.
I was going to say,
try.
No, it's not going to be this one. Because it's not going to be this one.
Okay. We'll try.
I like the line, I cannot allow a serpent to roam free in Eden. That was a cool line.
That is a cool line. That is a good line.
It was interestingly delivered.
It was like Eden, and Adam and Eve, because like you were saying Eve earlier, because she's
paradise was where,
and she's gonna be Eve if they can't find the fucking people to procreate and be a big incest place off one person. Anyway,
well, Cain and Abel, Adam and Eve.
Well, I mean, but this is based on.
Okay, what's your favorite line?
I mean, just comparing it to Adam.
I guess.
I don't know if it's
Eve made babies with her sons.
I love this line just because it's ridiculous. It's so grandiose.
Force the sea to give up its bounty so that we can celebrate our freedom with a feast.
He's basically saying, go fishing. go fishing.
A feast of crabs. Crabs and edible seagrass.
Yeah, edible seagrass. Fish, crabs, edible seagrass. He just told him to go fishing, and he's like, you know, go like bounty of, what is it?
Force the sea to give up its bounty so that we can celerate our freedom with a feast.
He's like, fucking dramatic as shit.
Force it.
Go fishing.
Yeah.
Clomiphene.
If it don't fizz, force it.
Clomiphene citrate.
Dermaline and Sterilite.
Yeah, Sterilite. Sterilite prevents infection. Dude. Dermaline is for burns.
Dermaline.
Stenophil is for anaphylactic shock.
What about chemo? What is it? Chemo?
Quinoa. Quinoa.
No, no. In
quinoa
arrested,
sabi?
In arrested
I can't eat that shit.
In Arrested Development, the chemosil or something like that.
Oh,
something like that. Anyway.
Temacil.
Temacil. All right. All right. We've got to close up our conversation this week. That was fun. And look forward to discussing more of these episodes, listening to more of these episodes. It's an engaging story.
Yeah, I was really into it.
So totally, far, yeah. I'm excited to continue talking about it.
It's really great.
One thing.
I like the dance eclipser in stereo for once.
Yeah. Well, like you noticed the difference.
I do. I noticed a total difference.
Yeah, you're just trying to press buttons. I know what you're trying. I know what you're trying to do.
How many buttons can I press?
When he goes to the guy, he goes, those guys are like, we need 3 hours to build the thing. And then Khan's like, well, you have two.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
The guy's like, I'm not Scotty.
Yeah, right. Do you think if they said 4 hours, he would have said three? I mean, I don't know why he was just like two, not 3 hours.
This is a motherfucker.
It's his style of management.
I think that's what it was, is his just saying like, It's going to be my say. My say. You decide. I don't agree with you.
City Alpha 5.
I don't agree with you. You do what I say.
Two hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah. All so, right. You know.
Oh, no. It's going to take you 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
It's going to take you longer than you think.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you to.
Yeah.
Take a break. Yeah. You don't want to hurt your back.
That guy sucks.
Okay.
Khan.
All right. More Khan next week. We'll talk about... I forget the name of the episode.
The slimy tentacle things went half bad.
Whatever the next episode is.
Khan! No.
Echoing Kirk's Khan.
Oh!
In Star Trek 2.
We forgot duty or no duty.
Oh, yeah. Real quick. Do the duty or no duty.
Okay, duty or no duty.
Your work cannot take precedence over our other duties. Duties, 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 duties. Your work cannot take precedence over our other duties.
What do you think, Jesse? Duty or no duty?
No duty would be like no duty, right?
Yeah, it's
therefore it is duty.
You think it's a duty?
I will go with no duty.
I don't think you've ever once gone. You maybe went once with duty, but
he's
never
frequently gone with duty. I think last week was most,
yeah, dude.
Maybe
sometimes
once.
It's totally
maybe
duty.
Once. You almost.
It's totally
I would
duty.
Say 95% of the time you go 95. No duty. Seti Alpha 95.
Do you want me to go fight you outside?
Yes. Yes.
I'm borderline on this because normally Tuvok is a very clear
he
DT.
Is. Even more so than Spock.
But in this case,
it's a little garbly.
It's a little bit more to the duty side. But yeah. I, since it's Tuvok, I'll lean towards no duty. But I could be convinced.
You're supposed to take it out of
context.
Context.
Yeah. Context.
This is supposed to be a stateless analyzation, meaning like you can't take into other factors into account. It's however it sounds, regardless.
What are you talking
regardless,
about?
Regardless, I am explaining. Regardless of who says it,
I get what you're saying.
Or what their history is, that doesn't matter. It has to be how it sounds.
I'm a human and not a machine, Dan. I'm a human and not a machine.
He hasn't earned like a no duty cachet simply by like being good in the past.
Yeah, well,
but you're going with no duty?
I'm going to go, if I'm pinned down on it, I'd go with the no duty.
Yeah. Well, I think you all know where I stand.
We know where
duties. Duties. Duties.
It's a total stinking brown, stinky doo-doo poo-poo. So poo-poo pee-pee poo-poo doo-doo.
You said you were going to do that.
Poo-poo doo-doo poo-poo.
I knew he couldn't get through.
It's a poo-poo. It's a doo-doo.
Fail. Epic fail.
All right. More of this nonsense next week.
We almost got there, and I just ended it all blue.
Website
too
It's Got Star Trek. Patreon/ It's Got Star Trek.
Tuvok,
YouTube, you know, all that stuff.
What?
At It's Got Star Trek on the social media. You can figure it all out. Feedback at It's Got Star Trek if you want to send an email. And we'll continue this discussion next week. Goodbye.
This committee is adjourned.
Tuvok out.
Star Trek Khan.
What?
Mouth, mouth, open mouth, figure it out. Mouth, mouth, open mouth, figure it out.